Hey friends, I want to apologize for this episode as Brian was having some very difficult issues with his internet due to the weather. I'm also dealing with a few things as far as smoke slash fires and heavy winds. So between us, we had a little bit of a struggle with this episode. So we did have to clip part of this because his audio did not come through or line up. And we tried to put as good of an episode together as we could this week under the conditions. It's not our usual fare, so I apologize, but it's the best we could kind of do on short notice with the problems we had going on. But I hope this is still enjoyable, and let's get to it.
7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 48 of Color of Magic, your magic and gaming podcast, where we try to give some ear time to people and issues that may not otherwise get it. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and for 48 episodes, I have had my co-host here, riding shotgun, Brian Allen. But yeah, man, here we are, almost a year. We are 1 month away from a year. You know, I might need to set up like a fun game or something for some of our regulars or something in the Discord to kind of support that and do something fun for our 1 year. Speaking of, if you want access to our Discord, you can get that by supporting us on patreon.com. And I want to say thank you to everybody. We've gained a couple of people every month, which has been awesome. You know, we're not one of the biggest patrons out or Patreons out there, but every little bit helps. You know, it really helps us to pay for our hosting, you know, the website, which I'm still working on when I get a chance, you know, pay for our services that we record with. And it does let us, you know, line our pockets a little bit so we can at least justify taking the time away from other things to keep doing this. You know, we think it's fun, it's important, and we do appreciate everybody who is supporting us. If you would like to support us and again, come have discussions on our Discord or ask questions there or whatever, you can go to patreon.com/colorofmagic. I want to also say one of the other groups that supports us heavily is cardsphere.com. And what their site is, if you don't know, is you basically go in, you put all the cards you have that you want to get rid of. You can even put the price you want to sell them for. And the cool part is you don't even have to know exact price. You can just say, hey, I want to get at least 80% of market value for my card. And then it sets it up just like that for you. So even if the price goes up or down, you'll always get 80% of that card when somebody comes looking for it. Then, if there's cards you want, you can do the exact same thing. You basically make a want list, and then what you're willing to pay for the cards. And then it just matches all the right people up, and all you have to do is send the cards. Money goes out of their account, goes into, technically we'll call it escrow temporarily. Once it's delivered and they check it off, you get the money, and boom, you're done. And even better is recently they made to where you can use PayPal to put money on and off the site. So it's super convenient now. And I know that I've used it several times already. Matter of fact, I just opened up 40 Double Masters boosters on stream the other day. And a big chunk of these, once I get a chance later this week, are going to end up on Cardsphere. And I'm going to send them out to people. Oh, also, while I'm thinking about it, we are in the process. I'm working with somebody right now to get a new kind of look to our logo and stuff done for the podcast. And I will be producing some paraphernalia. Best way to describe it with that. So those of you that are at that higher level on our Patreon will be getting a couple of items sent to you once those are done. And for those of you who just would like to buy some of it, the merchandise or whatever, once it's complete, I'll have it up with the link and you'll be able to go and purchase that. So that's probably still going to be about 3 to 4 weeks away. I do have somebody, one of our listeners actually, I'm going back and forth touching up a couple of things with him. But once it's all done, we'll share it with everybody so you can see it. So there's things going on. We haven't forgot about everybody. But man, so much stuff going on this week. This is going to be a packed episode. So we're going to try to talk about Zendikar because we know if you're a Magic player, Zendikar is kind of top of mind right now. So we're going to cover that. But we do want to still deal with our social business because we don't want to get too far out of our core competency today. So I'm going to start with a good one today in the soapbox because, yeah, this is exactly what the crowd sounded like on Twitter this week. They did. Everybody was up in arms and like, the trolls were coming out of the woodwork, and I didn't even understand why. But for those of you that don't know, there is an event, I guess you want to call it, or a series, called the Venus and Mercury League. To my knowledge, they're about to run their second event. That may not be correct, but I've seen it mentioned twice. So I'm calling it the second. If I'm wrong, feel free to correct me. But anyway, they have an event coming up. You may have seen the hashtag VMLMTG. And what it is, it's an event for women and non-binary people. For obvious reasons, right? Like, they're trying to encourage people of those backgrounds to participate in the game, to have a space where they can interact with and meet other people that are similar to them. Makes perfect sense. But for some reason, we had the same knuckleheads pop up that wanted to be like, well, why do you have to have an exclusionary event? If they're good enough, why don't the women and whatever play with us in the other term? Blah, 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 right? Now, let's be honest. Most of the time, the people with that opinion are the exact people causing the problems as to why they want to do this type of event. All I can really say is that, one, I think the event's a good thing. And I hope it grows. And I hope, even if nothing else, we get to start seeing other top women, top non-binary people, top trans people, you know, that are participating in these events that we may not have heard of before. Maybe we find new commentators, maybe we find new writers or whatever, right? So those communities and those opinions and whatever can be represented. Because hell, we've had women on this show that have told us how dumb some of the situations are that they've encountered in their stores and at events. So this comes back to, if you see this type of dumb behavior, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's in your store, whether it's at a tournament, call them out on it. Like, when somebody's going off on this thing on Twitter, just like send them a message and be like, dude, can you not see that, like, having an attitude like that is exactly why they want to do their own private events? And what does it matter to you? It's not like those are for some national ranking or blah, blah, whatever. They're just doing an event just for their community. Let them. Yeah, there's some prize money you're not going to be able to get. So what? Get over it. There are plenty of other things you can play in and win the prize money on that weekly. You can go over to MTG Melee and just look up. There's tournaments practically every day if you want to go sign up for something. But just trying to insert yourself in a situation that is designed to make people more comfortable because of people like you is not going to allow them to be more comfortable. I mean, it can't be any more clear than that. And here's the worst part. I'm sure the people who think like that probably aren't listeners of our show, because I'm pretty sure they would hate our content. Let's be honest. I'm pretty sure they ain't weekly listeners. Let's be real. But for the rest of us, if we can, let's make a concerted effort to call these people out, because I think these type of series, these types of events are very good. I think, honestly, the closest thing I can equate this to is when they started having some bigger women's only events in the World Series of Poker. And some people got upset because they weren't having a chance to win one of the World Series bracelets and all that. But, you know, women can play in these things, but then how come women get to play in all the other events and yada, yada, yada. But you know what? There's literally, I think the World Series is something absurd. Like, I don't know, like 30 events or whatever that happened throughout the summer. Like, actually, I think it's more than that, actually. But there's plenty for you to play in. One event catering to one specific group of people is okay. Especially when they're a highly underrepresented group. It's like, hey, let's get them all there. Let's let them be showcased. Maybe you find some other people you can learn from or collaborate with or whatever. Like, there are some positives to come out of this that could benefit you as well. And then at the end of the day, some of those, you say in the case of poker, some of those women showed up, played the event, and then they hung around and played other events because they're already there in Vegas. They contributed money to other prize pools that you got to participate in, and there was more money to be won. But that only happens because that other event exists. And the same effect potentially applies to Magic, right? If more people of these communities decide to participate, then there's more people in our local stores. There's more people at our Grand Prix. There's more people at the Star City Opens. There's more people, you know, all down the line. And that just makes everything around us better. Like, let's encourage these types of things, not discourage them. And whenever people are just being knuckleheads, let's call them out on it and explain to them why. All right, I'll get off the soapbox now. You know what that needs? That one today, that needs...
message!
That's what that needs. So here's one, and I actually had to change what I was going to talk about today, because I found out as of this morning, which I don't know how recently they put this out, but I saw this statement this morning. So I think it was yesterday, actually, when it came out. But the Oscars actually posted new standards for what movies will be eligible to win the Best Picture. And they basically have four categories, and or what they call standards. And you have to meet at least two of them to qualify. And so the first standard is basically on-screen representation of themes and narratives. So it talks about, like, your lead actors have to be, or lead or significant supporting actors have to be of these different backgrounds, or, and you have to meet at least one of these, or your general ensemble cast has to be at least 30% from these different groups. And the groups being like women, racial or ethnic group, LGBT, people with cognitive or physical disabilities, you know, that type of stuff. And then, or the third, the main storyline or subject matter has to be a theme or narrative centered on underrepresented groups, same groups. So that's the first one. That's standard A. Then they have standard B, which is creative leadership and project team. So you have to meet one of these criteria, and there's three here, but it's at least two of the following creative leadership positions, and it's a bunch of stuff like casting director, cinematographer, composer, you know, all the big roles, have to be of somebody who represents one of those groups. At least one of those positions has to belong to people of an underrepresented ethnic group. And then you have other key roles. You have to have at least six other crew member or technical positions come from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group. And then the overall composition of your crew could be at least 30% from women, LGBT, racial groups, whatever. And with so far, I'm like, I'm with this. Then standard C, industry access and opportunities. And you have to meet both of these criteria. You have to have paid apprenticeship and internship opportunities for the different groups. And have to have training opportunities and skills development for your crew in certain positions, also from the for those groups. And then standard D, the film must meet the criteria below to qualify for this category. You have to have representation in marketing, publicity, and distribution. The studio and or film company has multiple in-house senior executives from among the following underrepresented groups, same groups listed before, and all categories other than Best Picture will be held to their current eligibility requirements. This is pretty big. This is a big step, I think. Now, to be fair, so everybody knows, this doesn't go in effect until 2024, which I kind of understand because people said, well, why not next year? I'm like, I get it, because you're trying to give everybody time to, like, you've already hired people, you already have companies in place. Some stuff you're going to film this year or next year won't come out for another year or two. So, like, I get it, right? You gotta be reasonable. But this is a big step in the right direction. That, you know, there's basically four standards. You have to qualify for at least two of the four. And you're trying to get more women, more LGBT, more Blacks, Asians, you know, whatever, in representation and in some of these bigger roles. Oh, sure. But I also like the fact that they went even further and said not just the actors, but it's like your screenwriters, your hairstylists, your makeup artist, your whatever, right? Those are all important to producing a film. And they're saying, hey, if you want to get more people and diversity in our industry, we have to make the steps to hire these people for all of these different types of jobs. Like, if somebody doesn't do it at some point, it's never going to happen. And it's also not saying, like, films can be produced that don't meet these requirements, right? You still can. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There may be something where it makes sense. Like, if you're doing some story about, I don't know, Nazi Germany or something, you're probably not going to have a lot of Black people in it. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of makes sense. But you're not going to be eligible for Best Picture. you will not be eligible for Best Picture if you don't meet at least two of these four categories. And the interesting thing is, the person who I was looking at, his name is Kyle Buchanan, who I'd followed a little bit. I don't follow, but I'd read his whole like thread on Twitter. He was actually basically, because people were saying, well, what about this movie? What about this movie? And he was pointing out the ways that like several of the movies that have been nominated or won recently would still fit the majority of these categories, right? They would still check off the boxes. There's a few that he was like, yeah, that one probably wouldn't. Yeah, that one probably wouldn't. But most of them, he was like, oh yeah, that still qualifies based on like category A and category C or whatever, you know? So it's pretty cool. I think it's fair standards. It's not something that's unbelievably difficult for a studio or Hollywood to get behind. And hopefully, you know, we have fewer of those issues where you have a bunch of like directors get all these awards or where it's like, why wasn't there like a woman when there we had three or four big movies that had female directors? You know, there was not even one nominated, much less win. You know, I'm not saying like, hey, we got to just give it to a woman because one, but like, we got to at least recognize them and let them, like, how none of them get nominated, you know? It's crazy. So hopefully this starts down the road that it becomes more normal to see some just non-white males at the top of everything. And movies that aren't dominated by those. But yeah, I just hope we get to a situation where more of these roles that we see at these award shows, and especially with something as big as the Oscars, are more diverse. And we start hearing and seeing more stories. And part of that's going to come from people being involved from different backgrounds at all different levels. So people can connect and share their backgrounds and their stories and their experiences. So I hope this is a start down that road.
Now, the thing I haven't heard addressed, which it seems like, you know, enough people are being called out that hopefully it changes organically. Situations like where they attempted to cast Halle Berry as a transgender woman. And how, after their outrage, you're really, I shouldn't do this. Laverne Cox is right there and winning awards. How is she not the first person you called?
Yeah, I don't really get that. It's a little weird of a decision.
I'm not saying Halle Berry's not a great actress. And she could do the acting requirements, but how could she do it better than Laverne Cox, who actually has been through that? I can't imagine there's any way she could.
Oh, well, not even just her. I mean, just somebody.
Yeah. But that's the case. You know, one of the things they say about getting a movie made is, well, okay, we need a named actress. And lo and behold, you have one and you apparently didn't call them.
Yeah, that's just weird. I don't really understand that.
Orange is the New Black, how many awards has that show won? There was somebody they could have called and they went for Halle Berry first. It just...
And, you know, I'm even okay if you find, say, a person that looks similar to the transgender person that maybe is a better actor to play the role, like, pre-transition, potentially. I don't think that's necessarily the best thing, but, like, I could at least almost understand that. But to just say we're just not going to give a transgendered person a role at all.
When you know you're probably only going to make one or two movies the entire year that specifically call for a transgender actor.
Yeah, that's the part that just doesn't make any sense to me at all. Like, I just, like,
the other way is never going to happen. You never see, okay, who's, you know, Tom Cruise's lead, romantic lead in this movie. It's never somebody transgender. It's likely in our lifetime not probably going to be unless they're, you know, doing somebody's life story.
Yeah, I wish I could say you're wrong. But yeah, it's a tough situation.
It's always a situation where we cast, you know, a woman to play someone transgender, or we cast somebody like Tom Hanks gets to play Forrest Gump, you know?
Yeah. I didn't really get that, but I mean, he wasn't bad, but
He was not bad, but...
I get what you're saying, though. That's an opportunity for another actor who has maybe very limited roles.
Yeah.
And there was a spot to be a lead, and we didn't pick somebody with maybe some cognitive issue or something.
Because you're not going to see the actor that has some sort of cognitive issue get called to play Captain Phillips. That ain't happening.
Yeah, that's definitely not happening. Yeah, I give the Oscars credit, though.
These are all steps in the right direction.
Yeah, I don't, and admittedly, I don't think it just outright fixes everything, but I think it's a start down the right road. And those are all reasonable requirements. So it'd be interesting to see, starting, like I said, in 2024, what movies end up getting nominated or how people change their movies to be eligible. I think that could be really important.
What I want to see is, you know, obviously with COVID, the movie making schedules have gone all crazy. So are we going to have a year of the Oscars one year where Tyler Perry and, you know, the latest Marvel movie are winning a bunch of awards because they just, nothing else came out that year?
Maybe. Dude, I was surprised to see that New Mutants had their ads, and they were just like, last week, they were like, in theaters Friday. And I'm like, what, all 20 of them? Like, though, speaking of, to be fair, I do have a Cinemark near me, and they actually have been putting out a lot of information about how they're making theirs, like, as good as they can to be COVID safe.
Yeah.
And they, like, masks are required when you, because here, and this thing we didn't have a lot of in Texas, but up here, there's a lot of places that when you go, you can reserve movie tickets online and you actually pick your seats. So, yeah. And they're, oh, dude, the theater in my house, but there's several in the area, but my dude, they got like recliners and stuff. Like, oh, I can't do movies at theaters. And when I go in and they don't have like the big cushy automatic recliner seats and whatever with the deep cup holders, like, I'm like, man, this movie experience sucks.
Yeah, well, I went to one of those. A friend of mine got preview passes because they're a critic. And yeah, it was, you ain't lying. It's a whole different experience.
Oh, dude, but that's the thing. They're not even uncommon up here. That's like all over. Like, there's some still regular ones, but man, even the regular ones have like at least nice, comfortable seating. But anyway, I'm off topic here. But what they're doing is when you go in and reserve your seats, they automatically, basically, from what I understand, I haven't tried it yet, but black out the seats next to you. Okay. So you normally get like two next to each other, like almost like a sort of like a big recliner love seat sort of thing with that you can move the armrest so two people can sit next to each other. And then you have the next group of two, the next group of two, the next group of two. So depending on if you reserve two or three seats or whatever, they automatically make the next grouping next to you empty. So no matter what, roughly half their theater is going to be blacked out. And then they're, I guess, staggering the movie times so they have more time to come in and do like a good wipe down of everything before they let the next round of people in. So they are trying, and they're making the best steps possible. And it, honestly, it probably is mostly safe under those conditions. But I don't know if I'm still ready to go to a movie theater yet.
Me neither.
Like, I trust that they're trying, and it's all good. You know, but I also see how some people wear their mask with their noses hanging out. So, yeah. I'm not quite there yet. I'm almost, don't get me wrong. I'm getting a little stir crazy being at home a lot, but I'm not quite there yet. Not quite there.
I have allergies. And, you know, in current environment, anytime you cough or sneeze at all, people look at you as if you have the plague.
Well, you know, you might, though.
Exactly. So I get it. I held a cough so long at Kroger one day, I almost injured myself because I just didn't want to scare anybody.
Oh, man. I heard about somebody who did injure themselves sneezing, or I found an article about that a while back. But anyway, let's get off of this and let's talk about the thing. Yeah, let's talk about Zendikar, the thing most Magic players probably want to talk about right now. And let's just start at the top, man. Like, what is your just general feel and perspective about Zendikar?
This seems like it's going to be a really interesting set. Definitely some good mechanics. I mean, Kicker is always a fun mechanic, you know, a very versatile mechanic. So I've already talked about how much I love the whole party mechanic, and I'm going to build it before it's even ready to probably be built yet, but I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, well, what do you mean by not ready to be built yet?
Well, you know how when your first, you know, brand new mechanic comes out, sometimes you build it and like you try to do rogues and, you know, you see where it's trying to go, but it's not quite there yet. It needs maybe one or two more things. And I feel like that's probably how party is going to start out. But then you'll get the whole D&D set. And by that point, yeah, it should be, the sandwich should be complete at that point, I would think.
Okay, that makes sense. I could see that, especially because I can't imagine. I mean, maybe they don't, but it'd be weird for the D&D set to not have party as a mechanic.
Yeah, I can't imagine. It wouldn't.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. Assuming that's not anything I've had confirmed by anybody. It's just an assumption by me, but it seems like a good one.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, honestly. I can get behind that. You know, for me, and this is going to sound crazy, you know, because I hate people being sensationalist for no reason. So I am being very careful saying this statement. But I truly think this might be one of the best designed Magic sets. I don't know if ever, but definitely in recent memory. Over the last 5, 6, 7 years.
And you got enough background to where I would listen to you, and will in fact listen to you as you say that.
But here's the thing, and the reason I say that is, it's rare that something comes along and completely changes how we play Magic at all levels. Right? I mean, it happened when you get like Planeswalkers and, you know, Mulligans change and stuff like that. But just the fact that we get cards that can also be lands completely changes how we're going to play Magic from here on out. Like, Standard will rotate and change, but all the other formats are going to be affected. Because, like, now, even today, I'm putting together deck lists and stuff, and, like, I'm already running through my head, like, okay, I already like shaving lands in my aggro decks, but it's like, okay, well, how low can I go? Can I go to 20 lands and play, like, 5 double face land cards, maybe? Right, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know where the line is yet, but it's like,
it's going to be fun to find where the line is.
Oh, yeah. And it changes the deck building process entirely. It's also going to change how we decision make with Magic about, like, okay, well, should I play this double face land now early, or should I sit on it or whatever? And not only that, we still have the double face, like, regular lands that don't have spells, the pathways. So that's a thing. So, like, that alone is already significant. But if you look through the set, there's something for most of the major, even tribal decks. So if you're a casual player and you like dragons, demons, elves, goblins, angels, whatever, like there's one or two cards that are pretty good that could go into those types of decks. Now, maybe they're not stellar, they're not the greatest card ever, but people, especially casual players, look for that type of stuff in the set. And I jokingly said for years, even when I was talking to R&D when I worked at Wizards, said, I would start each set by trying to come up with 10 or 12 creatures that fit the most popular tribes.
Yep.
And then build everything else in the set. If it thematically made sense. But we even have a good merfolk in this set. We have rogues that can finally be a playable deck, it looks like. I mean, so much stuff in this set. There's stuff for different themes that have already existed. There's themes in the set that play well with other cards that are already around, which is nice. Because we've been getting a lot of stuff when you look at like adventure, mutate, whatever, they don't really build on other sets or get other parts. You kind of have what you have. Like all the stuff in this set seems like it can still work with other things. Like even party, right? We have cards already that are already rogues and wizards and warriors or whatever. So you're not restricted to them only working with cards out of the set.
Yeah, you can just take your cards from those, you know, from those classes that are already good, which there are, as you said, plenty of.
Yeah, and even going further, it's just like there's cards for competitive decks. There's cards for older formats that are some that are only going to be standard all-stars. There's multiple cards in the set that are probably going to be huge commander cards in the future. Like, just so much stuff. And everybody's excited to deck build. Everybody's like, oh, well, this card works with this card. And there's this thing that I can put in my commander deck or whatever. Like, just the hype is so good for this set. And we have not had that in a long time. We've all kind of looked at like the top 5 or 10 cards and went, oh, these are good. And yeah, the rest of the set's kind of okay. You know, but this is the first time that, one, the best cards in the set don't look like overpowering, just oppressive cards.
I was going to say, there's nothing I've seen yet that's like, oh my God, how did that get out of their headquarters?
Yeah, and there's some good stuff. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. There's some really good stuff. But nothing, like, it's okay for cards to be powerful, just not when you look at it and go, man, I could see a point where this just dominates the format.
Yeah.
So, in
that first 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, yeah. So overall, I just think from a design standpoint, I don't know what the design briefs were or what they were told to target or whatever. Stuff maybe changed late in development based on stuff they've been hearing for the last year or whatever. I don't know. But this is pretty cool. Like, this is the, and I've been doing set review videos every day, like reviewing all the preview cards. And every day it was like, oh man, this card's really cool. Oh, that card. Oh man, I could probably put this in this deck. You know, like, I don't think a day went where I was like, well, this is where we got the round of boring cards. You know, like, there was something big, multiple things that were big every day. So yeah, kudos. I honestly feel like I'm probably going to buy a booster box of this, maybe two if I have it in my budget after buying a bunch of other stuff, that I'm probably just going to put them away in the closet. I feel like even with these cards having potential to be reprinted like anything else, I think there's a lot of cards that are probably going to be in this set only for probably the next 4 or 5 years before they hit the point where they feel the need to have to reprint them. And I think that's going to keep probably the price of these boxes, not insane, but definitely above average, where you're probably going to get a decent return on them. But not only that, like, you're also going to have the box toppers. That's going to be a thing where you can get $30, $40, $50 cards out of there. I mean, like, so much good going on with this set. Like, when I already said, if you see somebody just saying this set's bad, don't take Magic advice from them in the future. At least not about as far as this set's concerned, not for the near future, because this set is not bad. Now, like I said, there's not like necessarily the obvious like world destroying cards in the set right up top, but there is a lot that's going to be popular. And one of the things going to help these cards on the secondary market is that there's stuff for so many different deck types. So many big finisher type spells that you can play in Commander. There's cool theme cards. There's stuff you can build around your tribal stuff. Like, not much to hate in this set. There's just not. But all right, people want to know our actual opinions, and people want to know, like, what do we find interesting? What do we like? So because I did do my review videos already, you are welcome to go to my YouTube channel. It's just search Power Dragon, PowrDragn. And you can find my opinion on, I think, for like 80% of the set or something. Maybe not that much, because I don't think there's a lot of comments and stuff I ignored. So it's probably like, realistically, it's probably like 40% of the set. But most of the big cards you're probably going to ask about. But here, I want us to get into specifics about some different card types and what our favorites are, and kind of talk about them and how we plan to use them. So I'll start with you, Brian, and say, like, what is your favorite creature in this set?
You know, as we talked about, it was hard. There's a lot of things that go into a lot of different decks. Like you said, Commander, Limited, you know, Competitive. So I had to go with Angel of Destiny just because I play a lot of Mono White. And even with, first of all, it's got a good win condition on it. You know, that's the life gain deck's problem sometimes. It's great. You gain 50 life. Now do something. And yeah, this is a win condition. It's 15 life higher than your starting life total. That is not even remotely hard for Mono White to do.
That's true. There are already some life gain decks that could fit that in.
Yeah, and then that aside, it's not a horrible creature. It's got flying. It's got double strike. It gains you life. It's just it's like, you know, when I try to build a win condition deck, I like to have, okay, in the event the win condition never pops off, how do I plan to win? This also has a good plan, but just, hey, if life gain doesn't work, flying double strike every turn, which you got to answer that real fast.
Yeah, can't really fault you on that. That's a good choice. And I'm kind of in the same boat, because there were probably like 6 creatures I could point to and be like, yeah, that one's kind of cool. Or like, I have a deck I'm already building for that one. So like, I was kind of on the fence. But I eventually settled on also a mythic, the Leyline Tyrant. It's 2 colorless, red, 4/4. It's a dragon, flies. You don't lose unspent mana as your steps and phases end, which is pretty sweet. And then when it dies, you can pay any amount of red mana and your opponent takes that much damage. Or you actually deal that much damage to any target, not even just the opponent. So you get this cool 4/4 flyer for 4. You can bank mana every turn, effectively. And then if it dies, you can just take any banked red mana and be like, you know what, here, take 6 damage on top of it. The only problem I realistically had with this card was that at 4 and 5 mana, especially since I like building the Gruul decks,
yeah,
it's jam-packed right now. There is a lot of good stuff when you start getting into that range. We're talking about Leyline Tyrant, Terror of the Peaks, Questing Beast, Elder Gargaroth. Like, there are some hitters. So I don't even know what that's going to look like just yet.
That's a good problem for a deck to have, is to not have too many good creatures.
Yeah. I mean, if there's a problem, that's the one you want.
That's definitely a first world problem in Magic the Gathering.
True. That is a first world problem. And it's hard to really be upset about that. And again, great if we're in that situation where we just have to make hard choices because there's so many decent cards to play. But let's go ahead and hop into spells. What is your favorite spell in this set?
Inscription of Abundance I went with because it's one of those, it's kind of like Questing Beast, where boy, this could do a whole lot of things, all of which are pretty good, especially if you kick it.
True.
You can get what, 2/1/1 counter, seems good. Gain, you know, X life, where it's the greatest power among creatures you control. And, oh, you can make a creature fight a creature. These are all things green is perfectly happy to do.
Yeah, I can't really argue that too much.
And then for 2 mana, those are just, if you play it just regular for 2 mana, none of those are bad effects.
Okay. I like that card. And again, like, I don't think we're going to pick any of the same stuff here.
We usually don't.
I'm actually stepping into your world a little bit here.
Uh-oh.
And I'm picking a white card. And I don't even know if I'm going to play this in a lot of decks, but I feel like it's a very surprising card, which is what I like about it. It's a Felidar Retreat. It's 3 colorless and a white. An enchantment. Landfall, whenever land enters the battlefield, you choose one. Create a 2/2 white cat beast creature token, or put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. And the reason I like it is cat decks already kind of struggled a bit, as I've shown recently.
Yeah.
And they do need a little bit of help. And this kind of does that in giving you something that generates cats every turn, or at least every turn you play a land. But it also can just buff your team significantly. You know, imagine when you play, like, I don't know, Fabled Passage, you make 2 cats, so you add 4 power to the table, or you just give your whole team +2/+2 permanently. Like, that's pretty cool. And I haven't seen many people talk about the card. I think it does need specific spots that it can go in. I don't think it's something you just toss into every deck.
I have a deck, so it was one of the ones it was an honorable mention. It didn't make the final cut, but it was definitely one I was looking at.
Yeah, like I said, I dig it. I'm another one that, like, I don't think it's going to be an expensive card. I just think it's going to be a useful card. And it's going to feel like one of those ones that, like, if you don't deal with it over the course of 3 or 4 turns, it's possibly going to cause some real problems for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a fan. This is the fun one. This is one where we're just kind of guessing here. But what is your favorite that we'll call possibly underrated card from Zendikar?
Okay. As I mentioned, I'm going all in on the party deck. So mine is a Tazri, Beacon of Unity. 5/1 white. It's a legendary human warrior, but it costs 1 less to cast for each creature in your party. Then, of course, you can pay 3, look at the top 6 cards, reveal up to 2 of Cleric, Rogue, well, you know, the party cards, and Ally. They didn't put Ally in the set again, but they still gave Ally some love.
Okay. I
know it's one of those where, you know, especially after Winota, you look at it, you compare any human warrior to Winota, and yeah, okay. It ain't Winota, but I think it's going to be okay.
I can appreciate that as an underrated card. All right. Now,
again, love for Ally. They you know, a little shout out, even though they didn't opted to not put it in the set as its own mechanic.
That's true. And I do appreciate that, kind of a throwback to the older Zendikar sets. Now, the card I chose here is probably going to surprise some people. Because it's a blue card.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, I don't play too many of the blue cards these days. But one of the things I've told people when they ask me is like, why don't I play more? But I said, because most of the blue cards have been kind of boring. They sort of all do the same things. But this set actually started putting in some blue cards that do some different things. So this one is one of the, what we call the modal double face cards. But it's Glass Pool Mimic. Two colorless, a blue. Shapeshifter Rogue. And when it comes into play, you can have it be a copy of a creature you control, except it's still a Shapeshifter Rogue in addition to its other types. The fact that it's a Shapeshifter or Mimic or whatever, and it's so cheap, is actually pretty cool. Even more so when you're talking about, you know, cards that need to fit certain types, like whatever you copy, you still get to be a rogue in addition, so it meets some party requirements. Being able to copy something that's like giving you bonuses when a creature comes into play or something could be really powerful. Like, it's one of those cards I feel like, now the flip side is just comes into play tapped as a land, you know, but it's pretty cool. It's interesting to have a creature copy spell, a clone that's that cheap and maybe still matter because of the creature type, which is also very cool.
I always love the copycats because of, you know, strange combo potential.
Yeah, I can't really put my finger on how much I expect it to see play necessarily, which is why I say like possibly underrated. You know, there are some worlds though where some of these cards, even some that already existed, have some powerful abilities. And if you can get a second or a third one cheaply, really could matter. And because it has a land on the backside, this is, again, what we were talking about, where you may want to skimp on a couple of lands or you're not sure. You could play a couple of these and then, like, worst case scenario, okay, I'll copy a creature. You know, otherwise I just have a land, and that's always reasonable too. And this comes back to, I think, all those cards that have those double-faced lands or whatever are going to really change how we play Magic and how we think about deck building. And this might actually be one of those ones that gets a decent bit of play. So there you go. I actually picked a blue card. That's not something I thought I was going to do. But there you go.
Feeling okay, Power Dragon?
I'm all right at the moment. So, okay, now that we got all that out of the way, what is your favorite just overall card from this set?
Really, just because of the artwork, Canyon Jerboa, the mouse, is just the cutest thing ever. I showed it to my baby girl, and she agreed that it is super cute. And though she doesn't even play Magic, she wants a copy of this card.
That's cool. And see, that's the thing too, when I talk to people about, you know, that are upset that the art style has changed and this, that, and the other, and it's become more like, I don't know, some people, it's like, it's not fantasy enough, or it's not this, or not that. And I'm like, I don't know, like, being able to appeal to a large audience and being able to draw other people in has its role. And I think what you're saying kind of points to that, is just even your daughter saw it and was like, oh man, I kind of want that. You know, I want to build a deck with that or whatever. And if that's the impetus it takes to get somebody to pick up a deck or to try to play the game for the first time, like, that's a good thing.
Because, you know, we are both comic book guys. How many, especially as a kid, how many books did you pick up because the cover looked cool?
Oh, gosh. I probably couldn't even tell you.
Yeah. You didn't know anything about the character or what storyline, or that it was part 15 of an ongoing saga. That cover just looked cool to you.
Yeah, that's got to be... Man.
I'm going to guess until I hit about college age, that was the majority of my collection was, hey, that cover looked cool.
I was going to say, it's got to be north of 20 times that I did that. At least.
And we grew up in the era of, you know, all the multiple foil covers. So we got a lot of money that way.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So the card, and here, this was hard for me, really, to pick my favorite overall card. And I almost wanted to pick like four, honestly. Because a lot of these, I know I'm going to put in multiple decks or whatever. But... man, it is so hard to pick. It really, really is. And I kind of want to go with Kargan Intimidator because it was a card I previewed, which just feels like a cop-out. And I feel like maybe I just thought about too many uses for the card already, which is why I want to pick it. But I'm not. I'm actually going to go with, surprisingly, Kazandu Mammoth.
Okay.
It's a colorless green-green, 3-3. Has landfall. Whenever you play a land, it gets 2-2 till end of turn. But it has a land on the backside. And I know that doesn't, when you say, people are going to be like, you pick that as like your favorite card in the set or overall, whatever. But the truth is, this is probably going to end up being the card I play the most out of the set. Because I play so many aggro decks, I play a lot of green decks. Again, being able to shave lands and have a 3-3 that's potentially a 5-5 when I want to attack with it, like, that seems reasonable. Like, if I want to cut some lands and be able to have another threat, that's great. And it's a reasonable threat. Like, being a 5-5 and be able to attack is good. Being able to play it on turn 3 as a 3-3 is good. Like, I'm about this card. Like, I can easily see myself playing this, and I don't know if I want to say half of my decks, but a lot of the decks. If I'm putting green in the deck for standard for the next at least year, I don't know what other cards are going to come out to probably make me change my mind, but this is going to be standard legal for 2 years. I'm going to play a lot of this card. Enough that if I were to build multiple paper decks, I would probably just go and pre-order like 8 of these right now. I say that I'm lying. I just buy 8 of them off of cardsphere.com. But
there you go.
I would. I'm not going to lie. Like, I have money built up on Cardsphere from selling stuff. Well, so yeah. I would just do my purchases on Cardsphere. But yeah, this card, I'm definitely going to be playing a lot of it. I have no doubt about it. So that got the vote for my overall card in Zendikar, not necessarily because of power level, but because of flexibility and the likelihood that I am going to play it quite a bit.
And I think when most people pick their favorite card, they pick it because it fits a deck they currently have already.
Yeah, I think that's got to count for something here, though. You know, I just...
We're not saying these are necessarily the best cards or the most powerful. These are the ones we're hyped about.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, really, at the end of the day. It's like, what am I excited to use? What am I going to put in decks? Like, that's what I think matters the most to me whenever I'm picking my favorite, like, overall card. Because power level, like, man, that's fine. But, like, even when the card's strong, you don't necessarily put it in as many decks or whatever. You're having to find specific spots for it because it does a specific thing. But in this case, like I said, something with the Mammoth is like, if I'm playing green, hell, I don't even necessarily have to be playing a creature heavy deck. Like, it's still reasonable to play because those decks that want the extra lands, you're like, well, what if my back six lands were actually threats or something I could block with late in the game if I don't need the extra land, right? So that's more than fine for me. I feel comfortable picking that one. But moving on from there, that's kind of our Zendikar wrap-up, so people got to hear us talk about some of our favorite Zendikar things. We did do a thing last weekend with the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. And I think some people, if you follow us, you know about that from our show. We've had Aaron Giddings on, who's one of the big promoters for the event. And the event didn't happen this year for a multitude of reasons, mostly being COVID. Which is unfortunate because there was a lot of planning that went into this. A lot of people really were going to push it and be involved and were really trying to take it to the next level. So it's a little disappointing that it didn't happen. Actually, I say that it's a lot disappointing, yeah, because the charity supports raising money for suicide prevention and awareness, mental health, you know, all of that. But what we did last weekend is I kicked off the weekend. I got on at 9 a.m. local time and did some streaming where we just talked about it, like, you know, sharing ways we can be better, ways we can help people, you know, talking about the difficulties and kind of how it affects our communities. And we played some Jackbox games just to kind of keep it lighthearted, have some fun with the chat. Everybody had a good time. And then I went to about, I think it was 11:30 local time. And then we went to a Zoom chat where it was myself, Aaron, Brian Augustine, who goes by Matumbo, He's also got a good YouTube channel where he does a bunch of historic decks. And Garrett, who's basically the production manager for the streams and everything they do. And Joe Klopchik, who's the head judge for organizing the actual events or the individual tournaments throughout the weekend. And we talked a lot about how it affected us, you know, why the charity was important, and talked about next year. So they're going to try to host the event, I believe, the weekend of June 16th. I think that's also like Origins weekend or something. But, I mean, a bunch of people that showed up to the event weren't going to go to Origins or whatever anyway. And they're putting it far enough away that hopefully by then we're at some level of normalcy. If nothing else, we at least have some reasonable treatments and or vaccines for COVID by that time. And it's not nearly as scary for people to go out and participate in events. The thing is, though, this next year is going to be lit, man. It's going to be big. Yeah. When you're talking about all the stuff that was planned for this year now gets rolled to next year. You have extra prizes for the prize wall for each of the tournaments, whatever. The charity auction is going to have even more stuff in it. And you're combining all that with the fact that they will now have had a year and a half plus to promote this event and get the word out and more people hearing about it. So this is basically going to be a small convention in North Texas. So if you're looking for something to do in the summer, you want a reason to travel, you want to hang out with other gamers, you want to support a good cause, look up the Hunter Burton Memorial. You can go to their website. It's HunterBurtonMemorialOpen.com. Check them out. Good people, good cause. And man, I really can't say enough nice things. This was going to be, I think, their 7th year. And it's just unfortunate that trying to make all the arrangements, push it off as far as they can, just COVID wasn't having it, you know?
Yeah.
Can't really do much about that. But let's talk about an interesting thing here, man. We're going to kind of start setting the table here. And there's an interesting thing that I saw got mentioned where somebody, and I want to say maybe it was on Twitter, might have been on Facebook, but I think it was on Twitter, where someone mentioned reaching the point where they feel uncomfortable now when they see the American flag being displayed on somebody's belongings. And I thought it was interesting because I started thinking like, man, I don't know if I'm immediately uncomfortable, but I definitely like quickly take stock of like everything around it to try to decide if like, okay, is this somebody just with like military pride or is this somebody that actually like has their What Would Bubba Do sticker somewhere on their truck?
It hadn't occurred to me until you brought it up. And then I thought about, you know, just the last few times I saw it. And yeah, it was usually accompanied by a gun rack or something that made me a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. And that's a weird thing, right? Because you and I both, like we've said multiple times, like we like being Americans. We like what that provides and what comes with that. But like, I don't know, and I maybe said this on the pre-show, which occasionally for those of you who want another benefit from being a patron, we actually record some shows about once a month and we send that to the patrons only who get to hear this. But I have a shirt in my closet that has a faded American flag on it. And I have not even felt like wearing it because one, I think it's really two reasons. One, I don't think I necessarily want the conversation that I may encourage by wearing it. So that's kind of one thing. But the other is that the people that have started, I guess that they've conscripted the flag to represent their cause, oftentimes are unsavory people.
Yeah.
So I also don't want to support that. So that's like a weird feeling to have even just that on a shirt and be like, yeah, I don't even think I want to wear this anymore. Like enough that I didn't even like, cause I'm making a pile of stuff I need to take to the Goodwill and donate or give it to a charity locally. And I didn't even want to put it in that pile because I almost like felt bad that somebody else would have to like see that and question, you know, where those came from or whatever. And that's weird, man. it's just such an uncomfortable and bad feeling that we have allowed people, you know, like when you're talking about like the neo-Nazis, the Proud Boys, you know, whatever, they're hiding behind this veil of patriotism. And with that comes the symbolism that they're conscripting as well. But, you know, it isn't necessarily new. The sentiment, I don't think, is new. I think feeling weird about the flag is kind of new.
Then I thought about, you know, how many, especially among older Black friends and relatives, how many of them have a bunch of flag paraphernalia? I couldn't think of anybody.
Yeah, we had none. Like, in my house, that wasn't a thing. Like, you never once were we like, oh, hey, we should fly a flag out front. I mean, we might have flown a Dallas Cowboys flag before we flew a American flag.
You and my family both. Now, my dad has some of his pictures from when he was in the military, but other than the flags that might be on or around his uniform, I can't think of any.
Yeah, and this is crazy, because this isn't, and again, this isn't us being anti-American. Like I've said before, I have friends and family that are ex-military and current military. Love them to death, support their causes, you know, donate to charities for wounded veterans and whatnot. All about it. So it's not about like hating the country or hating the military or anything like that. That's not what's going on. It's just like just understanding that, yeah, we have reached a point where people have started conscripting the flag, and the symbolism now is starting to stand for something that it was never intended to. It should be a thing that just represents people, that represents the country, that represents all of us that live here. But it's never, I don't want to say, word this the right way, but like, it's rarely, who would you call the good guys that say, no, we're doing this for America. It's usually the people that get defensive or want to attack somebody for something, for protecting themselves or standing out, whatever, they're the ones grabbing the flag and saying like, no, see, we're fine because we're patriotic and we know people will support that.
That's the worst case scenario. And lately, even the best case scenario is it's about to be an explanation of like why we need to blow someplace up. You know, it's for America.
You ain't wrong.
You think about the last, just
but I thought that was an interesting observation because you know, some things, like I said, think of the last what?
As you said, think of the last four or five times you probably had a long debate about America or what it means to be an American. That it's probably was involving one of those two things. Somebody questioning your patriotism because you called whichever politician out or whichever leader, or because you questioned a war somewhere or even the way a war is being fought.
Yeah. And yeah, like I said, it's just tough that's like where the line is, right? It shouldn't have anything to do with the flag itself. Like, I mean, honestly, it's also hard because we're seeing what's going on with these police forces still. And they further conscripted the flag, right? With the blue line and all that. So like it's even being changed and taking on different meanings right now. And I have to admit, I'm going to say something that's not going to be very popular, and it sucks here, but like, I don't particularly hate individual officers. I mean, I've interacted with some, I met some, and you know, whatever. But the problem I have is with the whole system right now. Like, when you can see, like just yesterday, there was footage I saw from literally every angle I saw, because I saw three different angles from people in the crowd or whatever, where you had people just standing out. They were protesting, but honestly, to be real, didn't even look like a crazy organized protest. They weren't like all over the place or anything. They were all kind of mostly just standing around at the point in time in the videos. There's, and no lie, I'm not making this up, you hear start coming blaring from the building, "Save a horse, ride a cowboy." Some police squads pull up. It looked like maybe 4 or 5 vehicles, if I remember correctly. And then some on their bikes and whatnot. And they pretty much show up and just start bum-rushing a crowd.
I like, don't co-opt my trashy country rap. I know it's kind of bad, but I like it.
But seriously, that's what's going on, right? And that's what, when you look at that and you see their blue line flags and everything else, like, that's what makes you start going like, really? Like, this is why when people feel uncomfortable about it, it's like, see what's going on and see what they're doing. Like, so it's not about being anti-American. If anything, maybe it's just being anti-flag at the moment because of the people that have conscripted the flag. And a lot of those people are largely kind of creating situations or a country or whatever that isn't open to everyone, immigrants, poor, whatever, that we're supposed to represent.
And being the comedian in the room, I got to go back to the song choice. I feel like they haven't listened to the lyrics, because that song, if it had been Toby Keith, I would have understood. That song is not about, you know, riding horses and beating people up. It's really more about drinking and chasing girls.
Well, yeah. I'm aware. Weird
song for that to be. It was like when we were graduating, you know, 30 some odd years ago, and everybody used "The Future's So Bright, I Gotta Wear Shades." Never having looked at the lyrics. Song's not about a bright future. It's about nuclear warfare.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. So I don't know. Like, and it's hard to put into words without having, like, a full conversation with people. But it's just because of all the groups that have conscripted this symbolism and the things associated with it, that creates these negative feelings. And it almost becomes a cycle, because now then they can start saying, well, no, see, they don't like the flag, so they're anti-American and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, we just get tired of seeing it used the way you do. Because honestly, the way I feel about it is, if you are a patriot and you do care, you should be mad that anybody, good, bad, whatever, is taking it out of context and using it for their cause. If it's not about, really, I guess, directly for the people, something, I guess, done by the government or the military, we shouldn't be using the flag for other things.
Yeah.
Hell, I got to a discussion with somebody about, he was mad because a flag, he'd seen a flag getting thrown away in like a trash bag or something or whatever. That it was an old flag, it was beat up, whatever. He's like, oh, I need to have more respect than that, whatever. And my thought was, one, the flag is probably made in China. Two, you don't say anything when you see kids putting pins and needles through them and sticking them up on their walls. You don't say anything when they're on Coke cans or beer bottles.
Or naked women.
Yeah, like, they're making bikinis out of them. They're doing all, like, you don't care about any of that. So you can't tell me that's not what it's about. Like, that's totally not what we're talking about. And when those people get called out on it, then they're more upset. And that's why I tell people, like, even when they're saying it's about, it is not about the flag. It's about all the things around it and what's represented by it and, you know, the people conscripting it and if you support them or not. That's basically what the discussion is. But, you know, I thought it was a good conversation, a good topic to bring up and just change people's, I don't even know, change your perspective, but at least get you to think about, like, hey, when you see it, if it makes people uncomfortable, here's why. It's not because they're anti-American. It's not because they're even anti-government or anything. It's just because of the people who've conscripted it, I've now got to do a double check.
Yep.
On are you cool or not, right? Like I said, if I see it on the back of a truck or side of a vehicle, I kind of like raise my eyes and go, like, okay, is there a gun rack? Do they got their What Would Bubba Do sticker? Do they got the stars and bars hanging up next to it? Like, okay, then I probably need to watch out for this person. But if not, it might just be that, hey, they're a proud American. They're maybe in, you know, retired military or something. And that's cool. But you got to double check or you don't feel right.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like you wouldn't be doing the proper service for your self-protection if you didn't do the double check.
And in fairness, you know, I'm sure a lot of my white friends, if they were to see me walking around, you know, dressed like a Black Panther, they would also ask some questions. And until they've talked to me about it, they may not feel completely comfortable.
Yeah. I think you're right about that too.
Yeah, we gotta have, you know, at that point.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, but it's conversations we gotta have at some point. But all right, let's wrap up the show with, I guess, something I want to talk about here. And it kind of sort of comes from questions from the Discord. They kind of brought up about just kind of the toxic feel of gaming content and whatnot. And I didn't really want to go too deep in that because I have Saturday or Sunday, over the weekend, I put up an episode on my show, particularly just talking about social media behavior, and it covers a lot of that. But I wanted to talk about, like, just how often people jump to conclusions without having all the details on things, and sometimes actually making situations a little bit worse and not necessarily better by doing that. And I don't think we really think about that sometimes. We're so quick to want to act that we don't realize that, you know, maybe if we took a second, we could get more productivity by making sure we have all of our ducks in a row before moving forward. And what's funny is one of these, I have two recent examples, actually. For me, one was having a discussion with some people and somebody assumed I didn't like Commander. And I had to figure out why. And it's because at some point they heard me say, well, I don't enjoy building Commander decks. But I told them, no, I enjoy playing Commander and I carry a Commander deck and I update that one semi-regularly. But that's the one I play because I don't like the process and the time that goes into building a Commander deck. But I don't hate Commander. But they just heard like, oh, well, Daquan doesn't like building Commander decks, so he must just hate the format. It's like, no, not at all. It's just...
Those are two totally separate things.
Yeah, it's just a matter of like going through the process of like going through all my boxes and typing up the deck list or putting them into websites or whatever and like having to do that literally 100 times. And then if I change my mind, having to go change things. So by the time it's all done, I've probably put in 150 different cards or something. Like, that's a lot of time and work, and I'd rather put it toward other things right now. The other is that I started a new YouTube channel. So those of you don't know, if you've watched my regular YouTube channel, you've probably seen or heard about my chickens or my blackberries or whatever else during that time. And some people wanted more information or more details about it. And I didn't necessarily want to clog my normal gaming stuff with that. So I started Power Dragon Outdoors. Same as usual. If you want to find it on YouTube, just go to Power Dragon Outdoors. You can find it. But I had some messages going like, oh, dude, I didn't know. Are you just like getting out of Magic content? And I'm like, what? Like, literally, I got a couple of those messages. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, what? I mean, I'm just having a repository so I can make videos of other things and put those there. So people who want to see that can see that, even if they don't follow my Magic content. Like, that's not, like, I'm able to do two things.
No, you're not.
But, wow. Yeah, but the thing is, it was that people were just going like, oh, man, it must have got so bad that they just chased Daquan out of the Magic community. So he's just going to make this other content now. I was like, that's like a huge leap to make for me just going like, hey, guys, I did a thing. And it wasn't like I was negative about it. Or like, hey, well, I've had to start this other project or whatever. It's just like, no, hey, I even showed the two logos being similar and how I wanted similar branding and all that. And like, I don't know. It's just interesting to me, you know, that people do that so quickly. And I don't know what, like, why that's become the kind of the default behavior. Have you had any situations like that recently where that's come up where you've been involved in something and you just find out that people made a leap in logic that didn't make a lot of sense to you?
Oh, I mean, all the time. I have, you know, especially as a black person, people just automatically assume I'm a registered Democrat. I am not. They start pitching me like I can't, especially in the primary. I can't vote for you in the primary because I'm not a registered Democrat. You seem like a nice person, but I can't help you.
Yeah, that is one that came up. You know, and it's funny because I had people for real that just started out, well, like, since I know you voted for Obama, and I'm like, whoa, you literally don't know me at all. And honestly, I voted for him the first time and not the second time, believe it or not.
But people tend to assume, you know, well, like Joe Biden, if you ain't voting for me, you ain't black.
Shoot. Man, I'm going to tell people like this. Biden is better than Trump, but I'll be damned if not every day he says something, that gap doesn't get smaller and smaller.
Yeah. That debate is going to be something special.
I thought about this recently because I was just like, how do I even view these debates? Like, is it an exercise in futility? Is it like, I don't even know. Like, I mean, do I expect either one of them to say something great or monumental?
Or even like, coherent?
What was that?
Or even coherent?
Well, that's true. It may not even be coherent. But like, do I expect either one of them to be inspirational? Like, it's just so many things. I'm just like, it's so hard to find anything positive in my head that's even going to come out of these.
Literally any other job you go for, from college football coach to Walmart greeter, when you're 80, they start questioning your energy level or if you should be at the house. But it's apparently the minimum age to be United States president.
Yeah. It is hard. It is hard to get my head around that. It really is.
How many people have you seen pushed out of jobs that could more likely probably still do the job because they hit 60?
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, man. Like, that's just one of those things. I think one of the things that kind of can contribute indirectly, and the reason I bring this up is like, we're kind of contributing to some of our own problems by jumping to conclusions too fast. You know, even, and don't get me wrong, like, I want to support all the right causes, but when somebody shows me a video or says like, hey, this thing happened or whatever, I'm like, okay, cool, but I don't know anything more than that right now. Like, I need to know where the location was, what people were involved, what incidences were going down. Like, you know, like, I get it, wanting to be on the right side of history and, you know, support the right people. Like, I'm all for that. But at the same time, if we don't have everything together, we risk creating a bigger problem. Because then you have people spouting the wrong information. The people that are problematic and are against you now have something else hold over and see, like, see, these people are acting, they didn't even know everything. Or, yeah, see what they did? They just made the problem worse because they weren't even thinking or whatever, you know. And you're just giving the other side more fuel. Hell, I've had people try to jump in and come to my defense because they thought somebody was saying or doing something racist or whatever. And I was like, no, we were having a conversation about something completely different. I've known this dude for like 20 years. Like, it's fine. You know, watching people's DMs get blown up or whatever. It's just like, whoa, settle down. Settle down.
Simmer down now.
Yeah, like, it's cool. We know each other like that. Relax. But yeah, it's just one of those things. So I think it's just an interesting thing to bring up to just like, it's cool, but just slow down a second sometimes, you know, when we're trying to be supportive, just make sure you get everything in a row because you don't want to arm the enemy, so to speak, because we've just made a situation worse or spouted a bunch of things that weren't true because we didn't have all of our details together. But I think that's going to do it for this show. We're over our hour. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, Brian?
All right. I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. Our family channel is Alan's Ever After.
And you can find me just about everywhere under Power Dragon, PowerDragn. Normally streaming on Twitch 3 nights a week, Monday, Tuesday, Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. And I'm on YouTube just about every day. And, you know, you can follow me over on Twitter if you want. And we have a new YouTube channel. It's Power Dragon Outdoors. If you want to find that and just see the stories and goings on about outdoor projects, my gardening, the chickens and whatever else, because they seem to be popular. So I actually have a video where people want to learn about their characteristics and their names. You can go check that out on Power Dragon Outdoors YouTube channel. But as usual, we're going to ask you, wherever you are listening from, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And please wear your mask, wash your hands, keep your distance from other humans because we're icky with the COVID right now. And let's just get back to being able to socialize, congregate, and play Magic as we want to. Hell, games in general, for that matter. If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.